Turns out the polls did get it right. One in three voters choosing the far right in Sunday's first round of French snap legislative elections. That puts Marine Le Pen's party on the brink of power, an unprecedented score for an extreme that's never before in France won through the ballot box. With one short week before the runoff, we'll ask why and what it will take for rivals to coalesce. Politics indeed makes for strange bedfellows. With a 577-seat National Assembly, we'll ask just how hard it will be for old rivals to hold their noses and vote for each other in the more than 400 runoffs where the far right is in with more than just a shot. More broadly, what's changed in the two short years since the last parliament got voted in the wake of Emmanuel Macron's re-election? What consequences will his decision to dissolve said parliament have on France, Europe, and beyond? Today in the France 24 debate, France's far right at the gates of power. With us, France 24 senior correspondent Claire Pacalin. Your poison of choice must be coffee, I presume. What with
tea?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm still British.
All right, because you know it's halfway. Huh? You still have next weekend to
go. We're not there yet.
Sociologist Eric Fassin is professor at the University of Paris, 8 Vincennes-Saint-Denis. Your latest book on France: A State Anti-Intellectualism and the Politics of Gender and Race. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
With us as well, Jeremy Guez, director at the prestigious School of Finance, HEC's Center for Geopolitics. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
And it's a pleasure to welcome back Emma Kate Simons, columnist for the New European, journalist for the digital news site Franc Tireur here in France. How are things?
And paper side as well. It's also a newspaper.
Was it a short night on Sunday?
A little bit, yes. Lots of tea and coffee.
There you go. More and more of you are, by the way, subscribing to the audio podcast version of the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other fine streaming services. Yeah, it's definitely crisis mode Monday in all the major party headquarters, all except Marine Le Pen's national rally. The highest turnout in a quarter century for French legislative elections barely moved the needle from what the polls had predicted. Eliza Herbert has more.
The French elections exposed a polarized and mobilized country. Round one voter turnout was the highest in nearly 40 years and a crushing success for the far-right National Rally Party, which received roughly 12 million votes, over three times the amount of 2022.
I intend to be a prime minister of a cohabitation government, respectful of the Constitution and the office of the President of the Republic, but uncompromising around the policies we will implement in the service of France and the French people.
The makeup of the 577-seat parliament will only be determined after the second round of voting on July 7. In seats where no candidate has reached 50% in the first round, the top two contenders qualify, plus those who received more than 12.5% of registered votes. In this case, it becomes a three-way runoff, and with a record number of approximately 300 expected this election, the political deal-making has already begun. Because in theory, three-way runoffs would favour the far right, but third-place candidates can drop out to alter the outcome. The left New Popular Front leaders vowed to do everything they can to stop the national rally.
Nowhere will we allow the national rally to win. And that's why, should they come out on top, while we come in third, we will withdraw our candidacy.
At the Prime Minister's headquarters, the Together coalition had a similar sentiment.
No vote must go to the national rally. In such circumstances, France deserves no hesitation on this. Never.
But to execute their visions, the left and centre groups will have to cooperate. And while Macron and his allies have warned against the far right, it is unclear whether they will step aside in seats against the New Popular Front's more radical left candidates.
There's still a lot going on, even though the polls closed at 8 p.m. on Sunday. That's because candidates qualified for the runoffs have until 6 p.m. on Tuesday to pull out if they so choose. We saw in that report, Claire Pacalin, this graph, but of course, this is, I guess, what you could call a guesstimate, because it was from exit polls at 8 p.m. on Sunday, conducted by Ipsos for France 24. But, you know, it's 577 individual races, and with each one that could be decided by a couple of hundred votes, this is, well...
We need to be so careful with the polls. The polls were very accurate when it came to percentages, how many French people would vote percentage-wise for a particular party. Doesn't mean that if you got 30%, you get 30 seats or 30% of the seats in Parliament. Absolutely not. You cannot translate that percentage into the number of seats because it's down to the local specifics in each constituency. So we need to be really, really careful with polls. A lot can happen in the next week. We saw 2 years ago in the parliamentary elections, after that first round, Emmanuel Macron's party thought it was probably going to get an absolute majority. It didn't. That would be 289 seats. That's that magic number. So we need to be really, really careful with these polls now and these predictions.
Now, another one of the quirks. Bear with us because this is a little bit technical. You need 12.5% of registered voters to make the runoff. It's not the top two automatically who go. So, again, this is a snapshot from Sunday night. There were 76 MPs elected, 190 two-way races, 306 three-way races, and there were even 5 four-way races. Four candidates in those five districts who had more than the 12.5% of registered voters. Jean-Miguez, of course, this number has already changed and will change further between now and Tuesday, 6 p.m.
Yeah, the three-way and the four-way contests are interesting because they go straight to the strategies of parties out there. So to make it clear, you basically have three candidates. More often than not, you have one from the extreme right and then two others. And then the question becomes the one who is in third place. What is his strategy? What is her strategy? Does that candidate pull out to basically give the second in position better shot at getting the National Front out or the National Assembly?
Oh, rally.
I get lost with the translation now. The extreme
right. It used to be the National Front.
It used to be the National Front. Le Rassemblement National, right? Out. What is interesting is that in some cases, there is no conversation. The third party member comes out because that person has really no chance of being elected, not to try to undermine the fight against the extreme right. Part of the challenge, though, is that in some cases, it may think it could do better, or number two is an extreme left candidate that the center candidate or that no one really likes. So there's a real philosophical strategic debate ongoing as to how do you behave, how does that brand you, and you're bound to disappoint a whole lot of people.
I want to go into this idea of when do you hold your nose and desist, and when do you stay in the race? Just one final word, though, on the result from the first round, because this is also important. Remember, we had European elections, Eric Fassin, just 3 weeks ago. The only difference we've noticed when we looked at the numbers, because, again, those Ipsos exit polls, if you look at this graph, what was a big shock 3 weeks ago was 25 to 34-year-olds had voted majority-wise for the National Rally. Here, higher turnout, and we see more of them voting for the left than 3 weeks ago. Other than that, the needle did not move all that much. Why is that?
Well, we're not sure why, but at least we can realize that contrary to expectations from most of us, the change in turnout does not change the result. Which means that people mobilized for each party, including, because we're only talking about the left and the National Rally and possibly about Renaissance and the President's Party, but also even for Les Républicains. Actually, it's quite surprising, I think, but what it means is that everyone has taken seriously that politics matters. So it's not just anti-fascists, to put it simply, who mobilized. That was one of the arguments, and that will be one of the arguments in the second round. But it's fascists as well. But it's also people who don't fit in either category.
All right, so on to the second round, I'm Kate Simons. I know it's going to be a short campaign. It's going to be intense. Is it going to be a different campaign from the one we saw In the first round?
I mean, it's already begun. At 8 p.m. yesterday, that second campaign began, the immediate claim of victory by Marine Le Pen. And then straight after her, we had extreme left leader from La France Insoumise, France Impère, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who came out very clearly and appeared as the leader of the left, Nouveau Front Populaire. He wants to be prime minister. So basically, he tried to paint the campaign.
He says he doesn't want to be prime minister, right. that it will be a consensus candidate.
He does say that, but he's very skillful, as many commentators have pointed out, at saying one thing and actually doing another. So, in fact, he presented himself as the leader, the Pater Familias, and he did say people have only one choice, basically between his left, which is quite extreme, and Marine Le Pen's national rally. Apart from that, the strategy clearly from, for example, Gabriel Attal, much more pragmatic than in the first round. He came out and said, basically, urging voters, first of all, the désistement, which is the stepping aside of the third candidate whenever there's a three-way situation where you could try to block a national rally candidate. So he urged that, but only for Republican or Democratic candidates. So he didn't really go into all the details last night, but he made the point that that could mean that people could come down to not voting for a small group of the worst of the worst La France Insoumise extreme left candidates. And there's a lot of bad ones, but clearly on the national rally side, none of them are acceptable, right? The Nouveau Front Populaire is a huge coalition that frankly would have a lot more support if it did not have this extreme left control over it, which is unfortunate for them. So it's going to work itself out in seat by seat, just like Claire said. And that's why I think it's very difficult to predict the result, despite the jubilation we see in the images there of the far left today, even saying that basically they will be in charge in the next parliament.
Right. Emmanuel Macron's prime minister, as you said, Gabriel Attal, calling on candidates from his party to drop out wherever they're third behind the far right, even if it means electing a hard left member of parliament. Not everyone in his own camp agrees. Take, for instance, the outgoing finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, who spoke on Breakfast Radio this Monday, just before the left coalition's leader of the Green Party in the same studio.
I fight against the national rally, but I do not vote for France Unbowed. I do not vote for France Unbowed because some of the stances they have taken are against the French nation.
Listen, I'm going to react to what Bruno Le Maire just said, because I'm shocked, and second, I'm incredibly angry. I am truly, because for the past 10 years, I've been living in a city governed by the National Rally. What Bruno Le Maire just did is cowardly and entitled behaviour. It's detached from reality. It's unhinged and not rising to the moment.
Marine Tondelier, who went on in that interview to say we had to really hold our noses twice in 2017 and 2022. Can't you do the same?
I think Bruno Le Maire and Edouard Philippe, who is, of course, the former prime minister, one of Macron's prime ministers, they are looking towards their own political futures here. They want to, we've heard Edouard Philippe say, he wants to rebuild the right and the centre-right. And he's looking at this saying, I do not want to be associated in any way with these far-left candidates from La France Insoumise, from France Unbowed. He's looking ahead right now. And I think that will help explain why he has this particular objection, and Bruno Le Maire as well. Also, politically, they are miles apart. Let's be honest. Edouard Philippe, Bruno Le Maire, they are right, centre-right. La France Insoumise, France Unbowed is far, far further on the political spectrum to the left. And so, yes, they don't agree. And maybe we shouldn't be all that surprised that Bruno Le Maire and Edouard Philippe are saying, yeah, we're not interested in aligning ourselves with these far-left candidates. At the same time, yeah, it's less clear what Gabriel Attal has been saying, because there's others in this ensemble coalition, so the centrist coalition, which includes, of course, Emmanuel Macron's Renaissance Party, others saying, hold on, our first goal here should be stopping the far-right getting the most seats in the National Assembly. That should be what's guiding us here. So there are differences. But I was at the Renaissance headquarters earlier today. We had Sylvain Maillard, one of the MPs here in Paris. He came out saying, no, there are no major divisions. We're working it out. We will be on track tomorrow evening for that 6 p.m. deadline when everyone has to finalize.
They're still working it out. Are you witnessing in real time when you go to those headquarters the left wing of the Renaissance Party going back to its original political family and the right wing, because that's where Gabriel Attal, by the way, comes from, and the right wing of the political family, that's where Bruno Le Maire comes from, going back to their family and the end of Macronisme?
It's exactly that. The impression that we're getting is that everyone's thinking about their own political future, and none of them wanted this snap election. That was a decision made by President Emmanuel Macron. He made it very late in the day. He went against some of the advice of his closest advisors. None of them wanted to be in this situation right now. And of course, some of them are jumping ship from the Macron ship. Others are simply thinking, where do I want to go in my political career? Who do I want to align myself and who do I not want to align myself with?
Éric Fassin, has France changed or is it coming back to the way it used to be? I mean, this is...
Well, it has changed. I mean, it's the first time that we get such a large number of National Rally voters. So it's a major change. That's one thing. But there's also institutions. And what we see at the moment is that the president does not have any authority left. In particular, when you have people in his majority, his former majority, saying one thing, another, yet another, well, that means they're not following his lead. So which means that on the one hand, he's created a situation that's very dangerous for the National Assembly from his point of view. He's basically stabbed in the back his own prime minister and the head of the National Assembly. But at the same time, he's weakened his own position. So if he's hoping that he's going to be someone like Mitterrand, who's going to be playing a very clever game with a prime minister from the National Rally, that's not going to happen, not just because he's not very smart, but because he's very weak. In fact, why would that work? In fact...
But isn't France this country where you have these institutions at your disposal? A president has outsized powers. He's got those state superintendents, the prefects, at his disposal. He can rule by decree oftentimes.
Well, what we've seen is that, for example, the National Rally has said that, well, he may be chief commander, but that's only an honorary function, which is very debatable given the terms of the Constitution, which does not say honorary.
Although last night, Jordan Bardella tried to, and he said that he would honour the Constitution and respect the role of the president because he got a lot of...
But that's a contradiction with what they said before. And in fact, what we know is that they're not willing to abide by the Constitution because there will be debates, can we say this, can we say that, etc. They want power. And the president is not going to be in a position to have power. The only way he could have power, and that would be dangerous as well, is if it's impossible to appoint a prime minister because they're so evenly divided that there's no majority to support a prime minister. In that case, he could try to go for the Article 16 in the Constitution, which would mean that he would have full powers, that is both executive and legislative. For a short period of time.
And a technocratic government.
And so that's a possibility, but that's only if there's no way to appoint a prime minister.
Jérémy Guez.
I share 99% of what Éric Fassin just said. Let me, and again, I mostly share what was just said. One possibility is the technocratic a possibility. In most of the...
So Mario Draghi's the next prime minister of
well,
France.
You know what? It's very telling. We've been looking at Italy in terms of precedents, thinking of Giorgia Meloni, as you know, how power provides a straitjacket and disciplines extreme right, but maybe the right Italian
but
precedent...
But she seems happy to have... She seemed happy to have this kind of...
You're right, but most estimates that we're seeing, even the most optimistic ones, suggest the National Rally does not have an absolute majority by Sunday. So if you have a technocratic government... So what does that mean? It means any prime minister would be vulnerable to censure and would fall very quickly. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Jordan Bardella made it clear that if he doesn't have an absolute majority, he wouldn't go because it would make him very vulnerable. The technocratic government would mean what? We have a pool of technocrats in France that are incredibly talented.
Yeah, no shortage.
No shortage of that, and that have nothing to lose. You want names? Pascal Lamy, the former head of the World Trade Organization.
But hang on, Jeremy, how will the voters feel about all this? It's an election. They're not voting for technocrats.
But they thought they were voting for Bardella as well.
We are in the middle of a political crisis. And Eric just said this very eloquently. We may be, for all I know, seeing the very last days of the Fifth Republic. The real question is, how in the world do we get out of this?
That's what the far left wants.
How in the world do we get out of this? And if we want to buy time, politically speaking, then I think a technocratic government would be as legitimate as anything else, because it wouldn't necessarily basically be any contradiction with the hung parliament, where there is absolutely no majority whatsoever.
But today Le Monde reported that the president has been considering throughout the campaign, actually, to share power in this cohabitation with Jordan Bardella, and then come in like the Archangel Michael slaying the dragon and stop them from coming to power, the national rally at the 2027 presidential election. That was one report, because there was a genuine belief in Macron circles until last night.
Yeah, it served Jacques Chirac well. He went into opposition and then got re-elected.
It can still happen, and they're going to be dominant.
Eric Fassin, well, how will the voters feel about all this?
I think it's not just the voters. It's the deputy.
The members of parliament.
Who've just been elected. Mm. In fact, if you want to have a prime minister, you need the votes in the National Assembly. Now, the only ones who would want a technocrat are the president's group. Because basically the left, if they start accepting that, they're shooting themselves at the foot, because they will never get to the presidential election if they've shown that basically compromises are okay, etc. And Bardella has been very clear about it. So I think the only way that there could be a solution is if Bardella, without an absolute majority after the election, convinces a few députés, a few representatives from the Républicains to join him, as several have done before. Oh, yeah. And so he could get a second batch of these, because basically they've always said, we don't want to vote for him in the first round, but we know we'll vote for him in the second round. So why not do it?
The masks are about to fall. Because if this happens...
Before or after next Sunday in the run?
Well,
the day after.
In the middle.
Yeah. The day after.
Or probably after. Eric is correct. This is very well possible. You could build a coalition like we've always did under the Fifth Republic, with the national rally trying to get the extra votes it needs from Les Républicains. This may hinge on how many deputies Les Républicains actually have, which is still up in the air. And the second thing is, do not underestimate, someone said this, this is a very heterogeneous front, the national, I am having
popular
difficulty.
Exactly,
the on
the
left.
Popular Front.
The new Popular Front.
That's its call.
There may be socialists who may have a sense of responsibility and who may want to get back to the table and start asking some critical questions about the future of France and saying, I want to negotiate with the president today. The masks are about to fall, because if the only strategy is pure chaos until the next elections, and maybe I get a share of the cake, I'm not exactly sure the electors will be very happy with that either.
Except the projections show the Socialist Party has been weakened by its decision to go into a coalition with the extreme left, La France Insoumise, and the prediction of the number of seats that will be gained by socialist candidates will be nowhere near like the 14% lead that Raphael Glucksmann had at the European elections on June 9. So for the socialists to come in and impose, ask for vote, get the vote on their own prime minister in a broad left coalition with some centrists, it's unlikely at this point. However, Raphael Glucksmann was speaking quite differently last night from Jean-Luc Mélenchon and other people. And by the way, La France Insoumise is also very divided within itself. There's a group of kind of renegades that have been purged by Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who themselves are being given support from people who actually vote for Ensemble. And even the presidential majority has said it's okay to go to vote for François Ruffin.
Let's talk about that, because this is, you bring up an important point here. When we, again, we're with a sociologist, so we're looking at the sociology of who voted what. And when we look at the results, the Southwest, which used to vote socialist, a lot of the area is now voting for the far right. The Rust Belt North, where there used to be a lot of votes for the communists, also voting a lot for the right. Who can speak to the working classes, to the lower middle classes in France from the left? Well, is it still possible?
That's been the main issue for the left for a generation now. That is, basically, the working class has deserted the left.
Why?
Well, in part because the left converted to neoliberalism. And so that hasn't been a good deal for the working class. No, no, not Mélenchon. I agree. But I mean, that's what happened, because when was the next left-wing president, the last left-wing president? That was François Hollande. What did François Hollande do? A labor reform.
He taxed the rich. He taxed the rich.
A labor reform.
I don't like the rich. In fact, I hate the rich. No,
no, he said that when he was a candidate. He said that when he was a candidate, he converted to a very conventional neoliberal position the day he was elected.
No, what happened is...
For example, he said he would get rid of the Mercosy treaty. He did not.
Does that poke a hole in your scenario where the socialists would somehow ally with centrists to have some kind of grand coalition? No. Would they want to be tarred again with the brush of being neoliberal?
It does not, because neoliberal has become a stick-all label that explains everything. At some point in time, we're going to have to decide what we want for this country. When you look at what the left is asking for, come back on the pension reform. So that's a shock on a supply, as we would say in economics. There would be some form of debate over immigration. That could be a second shock on supply. And try to boost demand. Mm. So what this is starting to sound like is a place where France has been between 1981 and 1983, and it ended up as a catastrophe for the Socialist Party that had to go back in time and to basically, abandon everything that it had promised for under François Mitterrand when it got elected. I think this is a very, very special time where there's a window of opportunity for us to have a real social debate over how we help people, how we help the working class, that in a way that is not the right wing. There are plenty of things we can do, economically speaking, to develop a new socialist agenda that is not based on the recipes of the past.
Well, I think it's perfectly fine to defend that position. But the question is not what do we hope for, what do we believe in, but how come the working class has deserted the left? And so we have to remember, for example, that we had the Yellow Vests recently.
Yeah.
And so this has something to do with economic policies. If we think of the mobilizations against the pension reform, that have been huge. If we think of the mobilizations against the labor reform, that were huge, and where you had a lot of police repression, we have to think, could it be that it has something to do with the fact that people don't trust the left?
Right, but they don't trust them because they pitched themselves and turned themselves. This Nouveau Front Populaire, if you look at where they picked up their votes, and I think you as a
sociologist
agree.
But that's something brand new. What Eric is talking about is over 10 years.
But this has been happening. I mean, in fact, the French left is still stuck, as you were saying, in this kind of Mitterrand-Hollande era. And Glucksmann came with this breath of fresh air with some new ideas, very anti-Putin, pro-Ukraine as well, and foreign policy. But, I mean, he wasn't listened to when it came to the push came to shove after the dissolution. So I think the old recipes don't work anymore. The left has basically decided, except for candidates like François Ruffin and the communist who lost Fabien Roussel, to pitch themselves to an urban elite or to an outer city group that are still intellectuals. And you can see that if you look at the Paris map and you see where Jean-Luc Mélenchon is pitching, it's to suburban areas with as high immigrant populations or it's intellectual urban elites who'll vote left anyway. And they've lost the working class. Why? Because they're not responding to them with their economic policies, but equally, they've allowed the extreme right to capture the debate around Islamism, around terrorism, and since October 7, around anti-Semitism in particular, and of course around immigration. The left has barely touched the issue apart from making motherhood
Claire
statements.
Pacquenin, on the campaign trail, this talk of birthright being brought into question, the talk about the far right putting forward questions about dual nationals being barred from certain strategic positions. Has this worked in favor or against the national rally?
It's too soon to say whether it's worked in favor or against. When you listen to the particulars of this birthright conversation,
birthrights exist in this country since the 14th century.
Right, the droit du sol is extremely important in the hearts and minds of very many French people. The right to be a French person if you are born here in France, no matter where your parents came from. It's a very important for many French people. And it's become a really, really big issue in this campaign. But I would say in some ways to the detriment of other issues and other parts of the manifestos of all of the parties and groups that we haven't really had the time to look at properly and debate around this table and around other tables, because this campaign has been so fast. 3 weeks ago, Emmanuel Macron dissolved the National Assembly and we had this election. It took a week for the left to unite. The official campaign started a week later. So 2 weeks of the campaign. And I really feel that there has been so many issues that we just haven't had. And voters, have they had time to read all the manifestos?
Do they
make their minds
there?
Up? Do they want to? It's been so, so
sadly
fast.
A quick campaign. That was what the president wanted. I have a question for, we asked about the sociology of it, but about the economics of it. This Monday, this is a political shock. There's a lot of people who are a little bit stunned after Sunday night's result. But I noticed Jeremy Ghez, stock market's up. The spread between borrowing rates for France and Germany have actually narrowed a little this Monday. Is it A, that it had already been factored in by the markets? Is it B, that the markets know nothing about French politics? Or is it C, that they know something that we don't know?
That's a good one. It's most certainly A. To a large extent, it's been factored in. That political risk, I think, we basically saw it coming.
Because right now, all the options we've talked about are what? National rally runs the country, with the consequences we can talk about more in a minute, some kind of a coalition or some kind of a technocratic government.
Yeah, but
it's all fuzzy.
Yeah, but when you go beyond this, what do you look at when you're looking at this from the financial markets? You're looking at, rule of law for now. You know, you said we were shocked by the results, rightfully so as citizens, but there is no real evidence that the rule of law is going to disappear next Monday morning, no matter what the result is. The ability of the French administration to raise taxes. This is incredibly important in terms of France's ability to pay back its debt, in terms of the willingness of France to pay back its debt. There's no evidence to the contrary today. There is this Meloni a precedent that says, you know, you look at the Bardella in the national rally declarations, you know, they're trying to discipline themselves. This does not mean by any means that I am not shocked as a citizen. It just means that, you know, history is at times more about continuity than abrupt ruptures. The past 5 years have taught us the exact opposite. Right now, the bet is continuity.
Except there's one major difference, and we saw it on Sunday night with the visuals. We could talk about the visuals of Jean-Luc Mélenchon with a member of the European Parliament standing behind him with the Palestinian keffiyeh. That's been talked about a lot. But there was also the visual of Marine Le Pen and Jordan Bardella getting up there. Behind them, there's a French flag, no European Union flag, Éric Fassin.
Yeah,
that's a major rupture with a major break with all the other parties.
But what we know in the case of the National Rally is that you don't need to read their program because, in fact, they keep changing it. So what are they going to do about Europe? Who knows? What are they going to do about pension reforms? Who knows? In fact, that's why the markets are not worried. Because, in fact, it has been a rhetoric for the campaign, sort of saying we're close to the working class, and so we're going to have, basically, we're on the left. That's almost what the National Rally has been playing with Marine Le Pen for years. We're on the side of the working class, and we're going to fight financial institutions, etc. We're going to fight Europe, etc. That's what they say. In practice, everyone knows they're not going to do it, and it doesn't change the votes. That is, people know that they will not radically change economic policy. They know it. But in fact, that's not why they vote for the National Rally. Because basically, the National Rally says it's about identity. It's about being white. It's about not being Muslim. In fact, that's what they're selling. And that's what sells. So in fact, that's why they can afford to change their positions on this and that all the time. And so the markets Well, that's not their problem, right? I mean, if there's racism, so what?
More concerned about the extreme left. I mean, markets are not
exactly.
moral. They're not moral, and they don't care about
exactly,
issues
which shows that basically the left is saying, or at least that's what the markets think, will change things, because otherwise they wouldn't be worried about the left.
One-third of the electorate, a little under one-third of the electorate in terms of absolute ballots cast a vote for the National Rally or one of its allies. Are one-third of the voters far right in France?
Yeah. Because basically, we have to realize that people are not stupid. I think that's an important point. And so they know what's happening. So it's not that they're mistaken, that they haven't been told. I mean,
it's not a protest vote, just saying, oh, we'll stick it to Paris.
I mean, basically, the protest vote was a theory that hasn't worked in the last 30 years.
But it is an anti-Macron vote to a
certain
extent.
Yeah, but it's always, I mean, any vote is against the president. So that's the usual thing. But in the case of the National Rally, we have to know that people know something about what's going on with the National Rally. We know it. So people are not stupid. So they know that basically when they hear all the time about binationals, they know that we're talking about who's French. And that's what they want to hear about. And they want to think that some people are more French than other people. So in fact, I think we should not forget that things are pretty simple and that we've been told, no, de-demonization. That is basically the National Rally used to be xenophobic and racist, but today it's not.
Okay, so why did the party that where Jean-Marie Le Pen was unable to get on the ballot in the 1981 presidential election now find itself at the gates of power?
Well, for reasons that have to do with the economic situation and the economic policies, on the one hand, but also that have to do with political discourse. Because, in fact, there has been, because the de-demonization that I talked about is not just Marine Le Pen saying that. It's not just the National Rally saying, we're good guys. It's, in fact, President Macron, who basically decided that you have extremes, but in fact, he seemed to, for example, he said that the economic program of the national, of the Popular Front was four times worse than that of the National Rally.
But also on the other hand, the extreme left and the left were on a project to demonize Macron, particularly since 2022, including in center-left media, as himself being an extreme right figure. So, in fact, when you think that Macron is extreme right, it's pretty easy to actually vote for Marine Le Pen, who not only changed economic policy, but she did this whole kind of cosmetic makeover of her party. She's much more disciplined than her Holocaust-denying father. That doesn't mean she's not surrounded by people who are completely anti-Semitic and a member of extreme right good groups.
But it's not just the left that tried to push the image of Macron on the far right. I mean, what did Macron do just before the first round of elections? He talked about the left being immigrationist. That's a far-right term.
Did do at the end of the
he
campaign.
Also
That's
talked
true.
About trans persons who could change sex in the city hall.
Anti-woke rhetoric.
So
he did do that. He did do that towards the end, but there's been a deliberate campaign. It's not to say that he didn't make many mistakes.
It's not new.
Jeremy Guez.
Look, I feel very schizophrenic as a binational, and every single concern you raised is one that hurts me personally without the shadow of a doubt. But the problem is that you've just summarized the problem of the left, which is basically if we consider that one-third of this country is racist, we are not listening to what they're saying. They're basically saying the only way we get heard is by getting your attention to vote for the National Front and or the National Rally. It's the same thing anyway. What the problem is that today, social demotion, the fear of being demoted socially, means no one is paying attention to the real social policies we could put in place.
Okay, that's an important point because the we talk about, you know, there's this conspiracy theory called the Great Replacement.
Yeah.
There's a plan afoot to replace white people with people from elsewhere around the world.
Well,
but you're talking about the Great Demotion. Explain what that is.
So it's basically, in a few short words, I used to be middle class, and I just kind of feel I don't have access to what my parents had access to as middle-class people. And I fear even worse about my children, about their generation.
But that's not a conspiracy theory.
Absolutely not. And similarly, when we talk about socialist policies, you know, a lot of viewers outside of France might have been tempted to think that French people were lazy, and this is why they were demonstrating against the labor reform and the pension reform. They're not lazy. easy. It's just that 2 extra years of work compared to what you were getting back in your wallet was incredibly small. The levels of taxes, the level of payroll taxes that you need to pay was basically leaving you with so little. Why in the world would you want to sacrifice 2 extra years of your life? The moment you start putting this in motion as a socialist, because I think this is a truly socialist conversation to have, you have a brand new roadmap that has never been tested. And to your point, you're right. 2 weeks can be incredibly, incredibly fast. You're absolutely right. Except that these debates have been ongoing for at the very least 5 years, if not more. And this is where the socialists also made a critical mistake, was not to be prepared for these types of debates.
They did not have that. Basically, when the election was announced at that night on June 9, only La France Insoumise had a policy that they quickly copied and pasted. But who was ready for that night and have been planning for years? It was the National Rally. And as for the déclassement of French, that's absolutely an issue, and it has fed into the National Rally and National Front over decades. But on the other hand, there's something inexplicable in this election, which is that, is it the economy stupid? Because actually the French economy is historically and in global terms doing much better than it has done in the past. I mean, Macron has...
But are the metrics perhaps wrong?
Yeah, but people didn't feel the difference.
Because as Jeremy was saying, people now, the unemployment rate is going down.
Yes.
But people are, you know... one broken boiler away from falling into poverty, or one
That's
broken
true.
Down car.
Salaries are low, and also this idea of not being able to find a doctor when you live outside of Paris. So it's sort of no wonder that all of Paris kept Le Pen out. It's a little bit like Paris Commune.
Eric Fassin, back in 2017, in this studio, we were talking about, you know, the question of would this be an election, at the time it was already Emmanuel Macron against Marine Le Pen, of the winners of globalization versus the losers of globalization. What could have been done since 2017?
Well, first, if you say in the case of Macron versus Marine Le Pen, that may be true. But it's not true if you include a third element, which is the left. Because basically the left could embody the losers or whatever. So there's no reason why we should simplify the story like that, in particular because I don't think that everyone who votes for the National Rally is someone who's a loser of globalization. In fact, people said the same thing about the Trump vote, thinking, oh, it's poor whites, etc. And in fact,
but to pick up on Jeremy was just saying, it's people who feel as though they've been shut out of the system.
Yeah, but I mean, feeling that does not mean that's exactly how it describes what happened. And in particular, since you asked about sociology, in fact, there have been sociological studies. There's a book that was recently published with research on the southeast of France by Félicien Faury. And basically it shows that racism matters. Why? Because people feel the people who count for me are the people around me, my family, my close friends, etc. So in a neoliberal world, people feel, I cannot depend on the state, because that's not going to happen. I cannot depend on a sort of redistribution of wealth, etc. So I have to depend on a narrow circle. And that has been the logic of Jean-Marie Le Pen forever. What did he say? He said, I prefer my family to my friends. I prefer my friends to my neighbors. I prefer my neighbors to French citizens and French citizens to European citizens. So basically, the closer, the better. So that has been the logic, which has been encouraged by the neoliberal logic in the sense that basically, you cannot depend on anything but people around you.
Except
that's how it works.
I think there's 12 million racists in France, those who voted the estimate for who voted for the National Rally. There's a definite element of racism. If you look at the National Rally vote, they're very successful. In fact, in areas where there are almost no immigrants,
exactly.
Or on these frontier seats, a bit like Trump, where there is an issue where there's been a huge change in terms of the demographic makeup of populations. But they're winning across the board when they've got 33% of the vote, as you say. So it's not just the so-called losers or the
ex-working
class.
No, but racism is not a reaction to the presence of immigrants or of black people or of Arabs. No, racism is an ideology.
And so
basically people who fear one day there could be Arabs next to me, then they can vote for the National Rally, if that's what they care about.
Except, on the other hand, the far left have been accused of fermenting and have done fermented anti-Semitism, and France has the biggest Jewish and Muslim population. So they're a very complex problem between rising anti-Semitism and
racism. So you want to talk about the far left, which is called left according to the Conseil d'État.
Right. The hard left, whatever. Claire Pacalin, just because we're out of time. 6 p.m. Tuesday, That's when you get your last chance to hand in your candidacy.
That's the deadline.
And then?
A few more days of campaigning, and then the vote next Sunday evening, and we will, after that, finally have an idea of what the National Assembly will look like, because what we saw last night, those results in the first round, we don't know what the face of the new National Assembly is going to be. We don't know who will be the next Prime Minister. We don't know what this cohabitation could look like. We just don't know. So really, this is a crucial week in French politics. It's going to be very, very interesting.
We know what we don't know, and we know that Claire Pakelin will be there Sunday evening at 8 p.m.
Well.
out in the field. Many thanks for that. I want to thank as well Eric Fassin, Jeremy Guez, Emma-Kate Simons. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.